The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. We have noted author John Feinstein with us today. None better in doing sports books than John. His latest book, I have just finished it up, Faraday. David Faraday's life, this is sad. It's funny. It has a wide range of emotions. John has talked to so many people to do this book. He's talked to former presidents, and not of teams, but like of our country. It's just gut-wrenching at times. David's battled drugs, has battled alcohol, has battled addiction, had a son that he lost. His first wife at the funeral of the son ripped him in front of everybody. I mean, it's a hard read. If you're into golf, like I am, I'm not good, but anytime I can have John on the show, we had John on last year and his daughter was playing piano in the background and he kept apologizing. I'm like, no, keep playing. I don't know. Iron Man, do you remember that one? You gotta be nodding your head. It was great. We're doing this fun interview with John Feinstein on a book and on Bobby Hurley and all this stuff, cause he knows Bobby Duke and all that. And I started hearing this piano play in the background. Like, what is that? John's apologizing. No, have her play louder. Let's just have some fun with it. This is not brain surgery. This is sports. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate Desert Financial and their support. Good people there at the credit union. So David's going to come up at about 10:20 this morning. Last night I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy. I did. So here's the thing. I get these movie things to go check out, and a lot of times I don't want to go. But Guardians of the Galaxy, for me, having had 4 kids, and it's kind of like Star Wars, isn't it? You know, Star Wars will show up on TNT or TBS every weekend. It doesn't matter where they are in the story. Doesn't matter. You sit and you watch. Just printing money. And Guardians of the Galaxy is kind of like that. I've been looking forward to this screening. It comes out tomorrow. Thought about having Goody on today, but I've got John and I don't want to jam up the show. But Chris Pratt's funny. There's some good one-liners in there. The audience was roaring. It was at Tempe Marketplace in the Cine Capri. So I love it. We had a great seat right there with my wife. And it's just blasting at us. Coming right at it, right through us. This is one of those movies, if you can see it in that setting. And there were some twists, and there were some turns, and there's some spoilers. There's a real spoiler at the very, very, you have to stay all the way through the credits for the spoiler of spoilers. You do. That's how Marvel does it. And some people aren't Marvel fans. I don't know. I'm all right with it. I think it's just more a nod to, I've had to sit through these. It's like Harry Potter. I sat through all those with my kids, my daughters. And whenever there was a screening, I would take them out of school. I would tell them, you are too well to attend school today. Because they'd go to school, the screen would be like at 10 in the morning. I'd show up. I'd sign them out. They're like, what did I do? Like, you're too well to attend school today. You need to come with me. And we'd go see Harry Potter. And we'd go have lunch. And the girls still talk about it. Now they're grown and gone. Do it. You're too well to attend school day with your kids. There's nothing wrong with it. School gets mad at you, wrong school. So I'm taking this movie in last night, and As it finished, I had a couple of texts during the movie of people wanting to know my thoughts on what Monty Williams is talking about or looking at doing potentially, and trying to figure out T.J. Warren and Terrence Ross. We have spoken about T.J. Warren and Terrence Ross repeatedly on this show. The Suns are having problems with offense. Chris Paul's not going to play. Cameron Payne, can Cameron Payne give you 15 and 8? Be a hell of a night if he could. Can he give you 10 and 6? Be a good night if he could tomorrow night. For them to get back in the series, though, if you're all relying on Terrence Ross and T.J. Warren, you're in trouble. This comes down to Kevin Durant can't shoot straight so far in this series. He can't. This comes down to the Suns just didn't have a good shot in Denver. They had plenty of good basketball shots. They didn't hit them. They had wide, wide, wide open looks. Like the idea of, here's what the offense looks like. Here's what we're going to run. There were shots there to be had all over the place. Instead, they were paint chippers. They were glass breakers. They couldn't shoot straight. So if we're going to sit here and do an hour on whether or not Terrence Ross and TJ Warren are the answers for the Suns, they're going to be done next Monday if that's the case. Now, can they help? Can they offset? Can they bring a little bit of energy? Can they bring some veteran, you know, stuff about veteran leadership at this point? I don't know. You look at Denver, and I think they figured their bench and their rotation out. Monty has not been able to do that. That's very clear. It's very fair, by the way. I think that if Kevin Durant shoots straight and he gets into his high 20s and 30s and he's efficient in shooting, like Devin is so efficient. Devin Booker is efficient. He'll go out and he'll score 35 and he'll do it on 20 shots. It's amazing to me how efficient he is. And he gets to the free throw line. If he gets the free throw line enough in this series, it's been physical. Not going to whine about it. Oh, they're not calling it. It's the way it is. Okay, you can whine all you want, but you can be whined sitting on your sofa and going fishing because you're done. You're eliminated. Is Chris Paul injury a big deal? Sure it is. Is Chris Paul going to be here next year? No. Not a chance, in my opinion. The way that things have been going, the direction the organization has been going, I hear about this two-year window, down 0-2, and even in the Clippers series. I don't think this owner is going to be too patient with a two-year window. Meantime, Mikal Bridges put his house up for sale, and he should, for $70 million. $7 million, I'm sorry. $7 million. I was wrong on that, my notes. Didn't see Boston-Philly last night. Am going to see Lakers-Warriors tonight. I watched a little bit of the Diamondbacks yesterday. The good news on the Diamondbacks, Corbin Carroll played, got in the game late. They're back home for a homestand. Christian Walker had a couple home runs, and he's hitting 260 now. Actually seeing something more than Dave Kingman. Dave Kingman would go up and hit low 200s. Go look it up. Hit the ball a country mile and a half, but hit for average? No. So that's good to see, up to 264. There's some college basketball stuff I'm going to get to and a few more things before David Faraday. So we'll pause here. And on the other side, the college football Pac-12 meetings are here in the Valley in Scottsdale. And there's been a little bit of conversation about the new TV deal and what that means. And some thoughts on Diana Taurasi coming back. We'll get to that. Then David Faraday. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right. So before we get to John Feinstein, Pac-12 meetings are here in the Valley, and John Wilner will be with us on Monday. Wilner Hotline, his content is up on the site. The Pac-12 meetings happen every year, first week in May, in Scottsdale. And some years I've gone out there to do the show, some years I have not. This year, with everything really being focused around the television contract, for some of you, the business side of sports is just hard to stomach. I can't believe we're in the first week of May and we still have no idea what this conference is going to do. I can't believe that President Robbins at Arizona is sitting there saying, you know, we got this all figured out, this new TV deal, not a problem, no big deal. I can't believe that he's not looked around some. Saw a story, I don't know if you followed this or not, where the Big 12 is looking at moving some of their sporting events to Mexico. It's very smart. It's very, very smart. If you're going to try to expand to become worldwide and you're willing to have Texas Tech go play Kansas State and those fans will travel anyways and it expands your reach, why would you not do that? Could I ever see a day where Arizona State and Arizona play the Territorial Cup south of the border? No. Would I like to see a day where the Pac-12 would say to the Arizona State and Arizona, rather than being slammed into Thanksgiving weekend just because that's what you've always done, we're going to open the season with you guys and we'll do it at a neutral site, either Las Vegas or Glendale. Would I like to see that? Yeah. It's very forward thinking. Some will say, it's stupid. It's sacrilegious. You're taking, no, it's not. Nobody watches Arizona State outside of like this many people on Thanksgiving weekend. And yet we sit here and say, this is great. No, Texas, Oklahoma, be go play in October. Move off of Thanksgiving weekend. Please be progressive. Don't just sit there and say this is how we've always done business, because that's how you get left in the dust by UCLA and USC. That's how you get left in the dust by the conference trying to get a television contract, because there's no flexibility. Is there really a whole lot of buzz at the start of the year playing Southern Utah? No, there's not. Would we be sitting here talking, this is not Ohio State, Michigan. This is not one of the greatest rivalries in college football. It's not. If you went to Arizona State in Arizona, or you're on the payroll at Arizona State, you'll disagree with me on this, but it's pretty straightforward that we should be thinking out of the box here, and they're not. So I don't want to just go up there and put people on that are going to say the same old stuff. Like, I'm going to be in Vegas in July at Pac-12 Media Day. It's in Las Vegas. Smart. Deion Sanders in Las Vegas? Are you kidding me? You know how that's going to play? It's going to be great. It will be terrific. There'll be so much interest. Caleb Williams, future Cardinal quarterback in my world. There's going to be interest. The storylines and the angles at Pac-12 Football Media Day will be great. So I didn't feel like going up to Scottsdale, and had some people that said, why aren't you at the meetings? You know, talking about the TV stuff. You've done a lot of it with Bob Thompson and Wilner and all them. Yeah. Diana Taurasi is coming back for her 19th season. 19 years. I took my kids to see Lady Di. I did. And she's still playing, and she's still getting it done. She said some really interesting things to Elia Gabay at Media Day yesterday. If you haven't checked out our site, there's some content over there that you should take in. John Feinstein, on the other side, his book on David Faraday. It is tremendous. We will have John next. All right, as promised, John Feinstein is with us once again with a terrific book that I've been reading during the Suns playoffs. I got an advanced copy, and I'm on this plane back from Denver the other night, and I'm trying to finish it up because I don't like doing book reviews or interviews and not having read the book. And people are coming up to me saying, is that book really good? Because it sounds very sad. And I said, what do you mean? Where are you hearing this from? Well, we just heard that David Faraday has a very, very tough life. And yes, but there's a lot of great sides to David Faraday as well. And John was with us last March 2022, and I asked him at the very end, what are you working on? And you were so excited about this project. I mean, so excited. And it's terrific. I can't say anything other than please go buy the book. This is not just about David Faraday. This is a lot about golf too. And as big a market as Phoenix is for golf, this is a must read. So with that as your buildup, take over.
Well, Brad, I don't know if there's that much more to say. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on again. And I was excited about this project because I've known David for years. And I knew his story without the details. I think it's fair to say at that point. And there is certainly sadness in his story. He lost a son to a drug overdose. He's been a functioning alcoholic really for all of his adult life, but there's a lot of joy too. His wife, Anita, his younger son, Rory, his daughter, Erin, have brought him a great deal of joy, and he's had tremendous success professionally. First as a golfer, that people don't realize how good a player he was. He beat Payne Stewart in the singles in the famous War by the Shore Ryder Cup. And then became really kind of the TV golf announcer because he brought such a unique sense of humor and insight to his work. And I often say, and you've known me a long time, I often say I get paid to do things most people would pay to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that was clearly the case here with all the time I got to spend with David.
The book is Faraday, John Feinstein, once again putting together something terrific that you need to get your hands on. It's something that I blew through over 3 days and had to reread some parts of it because it is so deep. I'm curious, how did you get this book to come to fruition with him? Because it is so wide open and no holds barred. There had to have been more than one conversation about, look, we have to talk about drug abuse. We have to talk about alcoholism. We have to talk about how you took off from rehab. We have to get into all the stuff, the death of your son. John, you got everything in this book.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing, Brad, is that and David and I, as I said, I've known each other a long time. We've been friends for a long time. He came and spoke every year at the charity golf tournament that Tom Watson and I put on to raise money for ALS research. And as you know from reading the book, he and Tom are very close. Tom helped him a good deal with his battle with alcoholism, still is helping him with that battle. So we've known each other a long time, and we had discussed the possibility of doing a book. And David had said to me on a number of occasions, if and when I do it, you're the person I'll do it with. And when he signed his most recent contract with NBC before the LIV deal, I said, what about now? And he said, yes, let's do it. And he was the one who said, when we do this, we have to be completely honest. There can't be any holds barred. There can't be anything where, oh, I don't want to discuss that. And as you mentioned, including how he and his family dealt with the death of Shay, his older son. There's the story about him having a little too much to drink after a telecast at the Masters and driving his car onto the par three golf course at night and being arrested, understandably, only to be released by then Masters chairman Jack Stevens, apparently because Jack Stevens liked David. And that's one of the things his wife Anita pointed out to me. David's gotten a lot of mulligans in life because people sense a kindness in him and a generosity in him, and his willingness to talk so honestly about his entire life, I think is a perfect example of what Anita is saying.
As the onion was being peeled back, did you have to take a step back and say, wow?
Yeah, I think that there were moments when he told me stories that I wouldn't have known to ask about. Unless he brought it up, like I said, the Master story being an example. He told me how he finished second in a tournament in Hong Kong the one time he took heroin. He was a drug abuser. And there were stories, you mentioned his walking out of rehab, which caused real problems in his marriage because it was Anita who felt he needed to go to rehab. And David says repeatedly in the book and has said to me repeatedly that he probably wouldn't be alive if not for Anita. She's his second wife. On their first date, he showed up drunk and actually leaned across the table at dinner and drained her drink with a straw, at which point she got up and walked out. But because she sensed that kindness that she talks about and others talk about, she was willing to go on a second date, and he showed up sober. They went to a baseball game in Texas, and the rest is history. Good history.
Don't want to give away the whole book, obviously. Just go buy it. It's really, really strong. John Feinstein with us for a few minutes. Faraday, it is out. The funeral for his son. The fact that his ex-wife stood up at the funeral. And again, I don't want to give away every last story, right, but it's very uncomfortable to read that part of his life, as you can only imagine, but in particular, that funeral scene.
Yes. And you know, the person who really explained it to me best, because as David said, he was kind of in a state of suspended animation during that period. He was frozen, to use Anita's word. But the person who explained that day to me best was his son, Rory. Not named after Rory McIlroy, by the way. It's a coincidence. But and even though David is very close to Rory McIlroy, but Rory was the one who gave the eulogy because David was totally incapable of giving it. And he actually sent me a copy of the eulogy, and some of which is in the book. And he was trying to make a point that this was a time for the family to come together. David, his ex-wife Caroline, his wife Anita, and David's two kids, remaining kids, excuse the expression. He said he was trying very hard to send that message to his mother, Caroline. And as Rory said, you know, you can say David was biased in the things he said about Caroline because their marriage broke up. But Rory, who was Caroline's son, is Caroline's son, said within 45 seconds, my mother, when she got up to speak, destroyed everything I was trying to say, the message I was trying to send. And I can't imagine how tragic that felt for everybody in that room.
Yeah. If Gary McCoar doesn't come into David Faraday's life, where's David Faraday today?
That's a great question. He he says he has no idea where he would be. But Gary, in one of those good luck moments, heard David telling stories in the locker room at the old international tournament outside Denver during a rain delay, and thought he was the funniest person he'd ever heard. Because David is the funniest person you'll ever meet. I've met two people who are on a different level in terms of humor in my life, Brad. One was the late Jim Valvano, and the other's David Faraday. And Gary overheard him and went to him and said, "We're going to have a long telecast tomorrow on USA Network," which had the Thursday-Friday rights in those days. "You play early. Why don't you come up and hang out with me in the booth for a couple hours?" And David wasn't sure he wanted to do it, but he figured, what the heck? My golf is so bad right now, because he was having struggles with injuries and his marriage and everything, really. Why not? And over the objections of the great producer, Frank Trakinian, who said, "I don't want that crazy person in my booth," he went and did it. And Gary said that for 2 hours, he said things that nobody else would think to say. And as they were leaving, going down the steps from the tower, he said to him, "This is what you're going to do next. And keep CBS in mind when the time comes." And eventually, after Ben Wright was fired, CBS approached David, offered him a 3-tournament contract, and he wowed everybody and has been wowing people ever since, really.
I mean, you went in deep with Gary, and Gary, of course, is a Valley resident. I saw Gary a couple of weeks ago at Alice Cooper's golf tournament, of all things, and it's just Alice do his thing. But you went deep with Tom Watson. You went deep with former presidents. You went deep, John. I don't know how many subjects you spoke to in this book, but it was just a cavalcade of people that weren't golf people. Some were, obviously, but there were a lot of people that had nothing at all to do with golf, which I think speaks to David and just his well-roundedness of his
Yeah, story. You're right, Brad. And a lot of it has to do with the TV show he did on Golf Channel, Faraday, because he had former presidents on the air. He had President Obama on while he was president. And I did speak to Bill Clinton in detail, which for me was just unbelievably cool, because the President Clinton's PR guy said, "You've got 15 minutes. And an hour later, we were still talking, because that's the way Bill Clinton is, as I think people know. But he felt very strong. He was one of the first people to call David after Shea died to try to comfort him and tell him, "Please don't blame yourself," which, of course, David does. Every parent in that situation is going to blame themselves, no matter what the circumstances are. But I think that it does speak to David and the people he's known. And I was fortunate enough, because people knew David was behind the book, was with me on the book, that so many people were willing to talk to me, notably his family. But the other thing that I think's important is, when David and I first discussed this book, he and I agreed it should not be a first person autobiography, that by allowing me to write it in the third person, and make it a biography, it allowed me to do a lot more reporting. I mean, David wasn't going to go and interview Bill Clinton. David couldn't interview his wife or his children. So I was able to do that. And I think that you're right. That makes the book a whole lot more fleshed out.
It is out. Faraday, please pick it up. John would appreciate it. I'd appreciate it, just as you folks watching us week in and week out and what we do. A couple other things I'll get you out of here. I do appreciate your time. Sure. When the political unrest in which he grew up in, and just the part of the troubles, which sets the tone, it's very early in the book, but I think it's important, and without, again, giving away the whole book, that people understand that there's a lot more, again, just than golf and people he ran around with and tough times in life. Early in his life, he had a lot of tough moments.
Well, there's no question. Anybody who grew up in Northern Ireland during that period had a lot of tough moments. That's why it was called the Troubles. And, you know, when he was working as a club pro before he made it to the tour, it took him 5 years, because he was a 5 handicap when he dropped out of high school and turned pro. The clubhouse of one of the clubs where he worked was blown up twice. He remembers being on the golf course one day and hearing pop, pop, pop. And at that point, everybody in Northern Ireland knew exactly what that was. And the clubhouse had been blown up. And he says that it took him a long time to realize how affected he and his two sisters were by those times, because it seemed normal to them. because that's what their life was. Their life was, you know, roadblocks and being stopped and buildings being blown up. And he said only when he was a grown up and looked back on it, he said, that's not the way you grow up normally. There's nothing normal about that sort of life. And there's no question that to this day, it affects him. It also makes him very proud to be from Northern Ireland, having survived that. And, you know, he feels bonded with Rory McIlroy, who grew up about 5 miles from where David grew up, although much later, and with Graham McDowell and others from Northern Ireland. And I think that's kind of a cool bond that they all have.
And he's a U.S. citizen.
Yes, he is. And a very proud U.S. citizen.
Very proud, very proud.
And one of my funnier stories is I had dinner before the 2018 Ryder Cup in Philadelphia with Rory McIlroy, who was playing, and David, who was doing the television. And during dinner, it was a couple weeks before the Ryder Cup, I turned to David and I said, okay, it's just three of us in this room. Who do you want to see win the Ryder Cup? Remember, he played on Europe's Ryder Cup team. And he said, I'm an American citizen. I want the Americans to win. Absolutely. And I said, really? I turned it to Rory and I said, what do you think of that? And he said, well, that's David. I understand completely. And he looked at David and said, but you'll pull for me in my matches, won't you? And David said, only if it doesn't affect the outcome.
Do you worry about him? That's my last question. Do you worry still, John? You've written this book. You're close with him. Do you worry about his future?
I think all of us who care about him love him. I love David Ferrety. I really do worry about him because, as he says, every day of his life is a white knuckle experience, trying to not drink again. And he's been through so much tragedy and had so many moments where it was understandable that he drank. It wasn't good that he drank, but it was understandable that he drank. And so, yes. There are moments when I do worry about him. We were meeting for breakfast in Boston one morning during the U.S. Open, and he didn't show, which is totally not like David. And finally, we had to get hotel security to let us in the room. And he had just, his alarm, phone alarm wasn't working, and he just slept right through it. He was fine, totally fine. But when something like that happens with someone who has had issues in the past, of course you worry. And I do worry about David, but I'm also encouraged by the fact that he has such a strong support system around him with Anita and with his two kids and with a lot of people who tremendously care about him and love him.
Over 30 years, John Feinstein has been nice enough to come on with me whenever something great comes out or just talk college basketball. We chopped it up about Bobby Hurley and the Hurleys last time we were on. I'm going to let you go off that because I'm sure you're getting run over for requests on this. Great book, John. Appreciate the time as always.
Brad, thanks for having me. Always fun to talk to you.
John Feinstein with us. The book is Ferrety, and we're back with more after this timeout.